It was a father's 50th birthday, but he was in a real irritable mood. His 11-year-old son came bouncing into the room all excited and repeatedly kissed his father on the cheek. Finally, he continued till his dad said sharply, "What are you doing?" And he said, "50 kisses for 50 birthdays." Now, ordinarily, the father would have been very touched by this loving display of affection. But unfortunately, he was grouchy and he didn't feel like it. So he pushed his boy away and said, "Let's do this some other time." The boy was just crushed and he didn't know what to do. So he ran from the room, tears streaming down his face. He jumped on his bike, drove down the driveway, wasn't watching, went out into the street and was hit by a car and killed instantly. That illustration and that little story was found in a book that I read a number of years ago, 37 to be exact, How to Really Love Your Child by Dr. Ross Campbell. And I gave a message at that time. It was kind of a consolidation of the different points that I noticed in that book that were very, very relevant to those of us in the congregation at that time. And it's one of the few books that I'd recommend. It's very good, and it certainly covers a lot more material than I'm going to cover. And I'm not getting a commission for promoting it. I want you to understand that. Well, because life is so unpredictable, we can't know. We don't really know how many opportunities we're going to have to love our children. You know, we need to love them without any reservations at all. Well, what exactly does that mean? And what are some of the things we need to do to remember it? You know, while this is being directed primarily toward parents and children, it doesn't necessarily just apply to them. Everyone here can benefit from some of the principles that we're going to look at and help them as they relate to other people in their lives. The one thing that we need to think about is we have to remember that children are children. That's just what they are. They're not adults, they're children. And as the case may be, there are some adults who may still act like children, maybe have never grown up. So in that sense, there are adults who continue to act like children. They've never acquired a physical, emotional maturity. Turn to Ephesians 4. Ephesians 4, verse 4. Paul talking to the Ephesians, and he said, "That we henceforth be no more children, tossed to and fro, and carried about with every wind of doctrine." Now here he was addressing doctrinal issues, but he was also pointing out one of the proclivities of children is that children are always changing. They're always doing something different. One day Susie wants to be a nurse, the next month a princess, and the month or two after that she wants to be a movie star. Boys are the same way. When I was in grade school, I wanted to be a cowboy. When I was in high school, I played in a small dance band, and I wanted to be a musician. when I went in the Navy and saw all these second lieutenants with their golden wings on their lapel, I wanted to be a pilot. And then I got interested in the theater, and I went to UCLA for a semester until I got disillusioned with Los Angeles. But that's the way children are. Dad used to tell me, John, you never stick to one thing. Why don't you just stick to one thing? And that was very true, because I did bounce around and tried a lot of different things. You know, sometimes you'll hear adults say, well, when I grow up, and these can be in their 50s, 60s, and 70s, they'll use that phrase, well, when I grow up, I want to do this, I want to do that. You know, and there may be an element of truth in the way that's stated, because maybe they've never grown up, maybe they've never found their niche, maybe they're not emotionally grown up. Maybe they never had the opportunity, maybe they never had the parents' or their parents' direction that enabled them to have a goal on which to focus, a reason to be drawing breath while they were here on earth. When someone says that, it may be especially bad if it implies they've never found a meaning to their life, or it's been effectively put on hold for some reason. It's not the purpose of what I'm talking about to discuss that, but just to point out and realize that people can arrive at that point. So young children are constantly jumping around from one thing to another. And that's okay. That's all right. That's what childhood is all about. You know, they don't have a repertoire of knowledge and experience like adults do. They don't have that to draw on to make decisions. And childhood is the time when that happens, where they begin to have the opportunity to acquire some kind of background that enables them to make decisions. Another thing to recognize is that children will constantly act like children. Children will constantly act like children. That's what they are. You know, while we'd like them to be mature, we'd like them to act like adults, they don't necessarily do it on our timeline. Turn to Luke 7, verse 30. Luke 7, verse 30. But the Pharisees and lawyers rejected the counsel of God against themselves, being not baptized of him, talking here about John the Baptist. Verse 31, and the Lord said, whereunto them shall I liken the men of this generation? And to what are they like? Verse 32, they are like unto children sitting in the marketplace and calling one to another and saying, we have piped unto you, we've played the flute, but you haven't danced, you're just watching. We've mourned to you, and you've not wept. They weren't engaged in anything to do with what was going on. They just watched from the sidelines. You know, children usually like playing games outside. You know, I'm sure you can all remember the times you spent outside playing with your friends, or in some cases, making up games of your own when there weren't any other people around. Well, Jesus was using this example to show it was like one group of children saying to the other, well, you're no fun. You're just sitting there. We're not going to play with you because you won't play our games. We're going to take our toys and go home. Jesus himself had seen and taken part in games when he was a child. Now here, one group of children, represented by the Pharisees, were sitting on the sidelines and refusing to take part in any game whatsoever, whether it be playing a joyful and happy marriage or playing funeral. But, you know, I can't imagine too many people playing funeral. I think if I'd grown up in New Orleans and seen the jazz musicians playing for the casket as it went to the cemetery and then marching back playing, you know, when the saints go marching in or something like that, maybe I could have got into playing it. But unfortunately, I went to a funeral when I was quite young, and I can remember we had to file up past the casket and look at the person. And as a youngster, you don't know any better. You just go along. And that was the last time I ever did that. That just, you know, it just registered in the wrong way. Anyway, the Pharisees condemned John the Baptist for being very austere, not having any fun, whereas Jesus they condemned for having a good time and eating with the Pharisees or eating with the publicans and sinners. That was a big contrast between the two. They, the Pharisees, were like the children sitting on the sidelines. They weren't involved. They weren't engaged. They didn't commit themselves to playing anything. They didn't want to play the game of marriage or funeral, and they just didn't want to participate. Turn to Jeremiah 4, verse 22. Jeremiah 4, verse 22. For my people is foolish. They've not known me. They are sottish, meaning silly or foolish children. And they have none understanding. They are wise to do evil, but to do good they have no knowledge. And that's the way children are. Since they don't have any kind of a background, they're easily led astray. You know, children are silly and foolish, and they like to pretend when they play. That's just the way children are. When I was young, there was a popular radio program that was called Let's Pretend. Unfortunately, it made such a strong impression on me, I can't pretend to remember what it was about. I just remember the name. But it was directed toward children. Children will do foolish things. I fell out of a tree in Spokane after the second grade, and we moved to Monroe, and I got bucked off a horse and broke my arm the second time. I broke it for the first time when I fell out of the tree, and then secondly, because I didn't know you shouldn't ride a horse double, and I found out the hard way. So children will do foolish things because they don't think. They don't think about the consequences. They haven't had enough experience. They haven't a history. They haven't been taught. And so they're bound to get into trouble because of some of those things. Job 19, verse 18. Job 19, verse 18. Yea, young children despised me. I arose and they spake against me. So Job, when he was in the condition he was in, everyone was against him, including the children. You know, it's not uncommon for childish behavior to be unpleasant. That often can be the origin of bullying when they get to school, and that usually begins in school. You know, making fun of someone who's crippled, making fun of someone who's poor or less fortunate, not popular, maybe making fun of someone who's a nerd or can't afford a certain type of clothing. And that, of course, is why some schools will have uniforms. Well, you name it, and if the child is someone who's different in any way, they can be the target for a bully. Children learn that putting someone down elevates them temporarily, but it's not lasting. It's childish behavior, but that's how they will act, especially when they're around and influenced by their peers. They see someone else do it, and, you know, they have to do it too. Isaiah 30, verse 1. Isaiah 30, verse 1. Here's another trait of children. Woe to the rebellious children, saith the Eternal, that take counsel, but not of me, and that cover with a covering, but not of my spirit, that they may add sin to sin. So that's another characteristic of children. And you see it when they become teenagers a lot of times. They tend to be rebellious. They are exploring, you know, what they think is a newfound freedom, and they want to make their own decisions. I remember back when I was in high school, James Dean was a movie actor which was noted for his rebellious attitude. I mean, I can picture him in my mind's eye, black leather jacket, Levi's, a t-shirt, cigarette hanging out of his mouth, and his thumb hooked in his Levi's, kind of standing there looking sullen. And that's what was attractive to the teens. It was a sign of rebellion. You know, that's what happens when they get to be teenagers. Verse 9, Isaiah 30, verse 9. That this is a rebellious people, lying children. Lying children, another trait of children that will not hear the law of the Eternal. It's easy to lie about something. You know, it's a little white lie, but they don't differentiate between a white and a black lie or whatever the other lie would be. You know, they don't want to get in trouble. I'm telling Aunt Veronica because she, when she was in the first or second grade, took some cookies off her teacher's desk, which were intended for the teacher. And then she had such a guilty conscience about it that she put them back. And to the day of her father's and mother's death, she was too embarrassed to tell them what she'd done. I mean, it just, you know, that's the way it affects some people. Sometimes your children will tell you later on in life about some of the stunts they pulled when they were growing up. I'm actually happy that we have that kind of relationship with our children, that they don't feel that they can't disclose things like that. I mean, we have a real closeness with them. I often thought that my dad moved to Missouri. He lived across the road from us when my children were little because he wanted to escape their frequent tricks that they played on him when they were little. Now, he said he moved for other reasons, but I often wondered if maybe that was part of it. My son, Greg, seldom got in trouble when he was growing up. You know, I can say that I never had any problems with him to speak of. And I didn't find out later on until He was an adult when he sheepishly told me about some of the experiments he and his best friend Forey conducted, like when they experimented with acetylene that they had brought home from their shop class in school and made bombs out of jars covered with duct tape and containing the gas. I always wondered why there were fragments of glass covered with duct tape at the end of our driveway near the woods. I never could figure out what those were for, where they'd originated, and you know, there weren't a lot of them. They tried to clean up after themselves, but there were a few. But anyway, that's the way children are. They'll do things like that, and you won't find out about it until later on. The thing that could have happened with regard to that is, you know, they were just teenagers, but they could have lost an eye or a arm or a leg or their lives if something had gone wrong. And you might ask, well, where were the parents? Well, I was probably working, and my wife was probably shopping, and, you know, they were big enough to be home alone, so any explosion or anything, we wouldn't have heard. But that's the way children are. Forey went on to go to work for Microsoft, and just the other day, just to see if I could find out anything about him, since we've kind of lost touch, I saw he was listed of one of 25 distinguished engineers at Microsoft. And I'm not sure how and what you have to do to qualify to be in that list, but I thought, well, maybe some of the results of their experiments when they were young paid off. Anyway, turn to Psalm 103, verse 13. Psalm 103, verse 13. Like as a father pitieth his children, so the Eternal pitieth them that fear him. Just as we will pity our children for some of the things they do, so the Lord pitieth us, those that fear him. You know, we need to recognize that if we do our part as parents and love them, despite their childish behavior, that they will grow up and begin to mature and give up their childish ways. You know, you love them through that process. A very important fact to remember is that if we only love our children when they please us, like they bring home a great report card or they score a touchdown or something like that, and convey love and appreciation to them at that time, they won't feel that that love is genuine. You know, certainly those are times that you compliment them for what they've done, but you shouldn't wait until times like that to show your appreciation or, shower them with attention. If we do that only when they've done something, then they'll get the idea that it's only when they perform that in such a way that they'll be expected or accepted. And they do it to try to meet our expectations. This creates insecurity, which can affect their self-image and prevent them from more mature behavior. God is consistent in his love for us, and we should love our children in the same way, regardless of how old they are and regardless of what they do. That love should never be diminished by anything. We may not like what they do, but that should never, ever stop us from loving them. We need to realize their feelings are very important. You know, they seem to have a flair for recognizing our feelings, we as parents. For example, they may say when you come in the door, "Dad, did you have a good day today? You know, how was your day? Did you have any problems with your boss or have any problems at work?" My oldest granddaughter, Desiree, has a great intuition when it comes to that type of thing. She can really pick up on people and their feelings and what she senses, especially sometimes if I'm not quite as talkative as I normally am, she will pick up on that and say something like, "Grandpa, are you okay? Are you all right?" You know, that's just the way she is. Her antenna is so geared to what's going on around her. She's so attuned to everything going on around her that she picks up on things that she feels are out of order, you know, not the same or out of balance. Sometimes she gets her feelings hurt if the person she questions doesn't particularly want to talk about whatever it is that's bothering them or, you know, about anything. And then she sometimes thinks they don't appreciate her questions. She's pretty sensitive about that. But children are very sensitive. They do pick up on things like that. We always need to remember they're much more emotional about events than the events themselves, that the things that occur to them or happen to them. You know, they remember how they felt about something that happened, even if they don't remember all of the details of or description of what actually took place. They do remember the fact that they felt a certain way. I won't retell the story of when I ran away from home in the seventh grade since I've told it before, other than to say that after I returned home and saw the expression of disappointment on my dad's face after he talked to me and then turned away and left the room, that hurt me far more than any spanking could have ever affected me. And the fact that he didn't give me a spanking, I think, hurt even more because I was expecting it. I thought, I need to be punished. And yet, he just turned his back and walked out of the room. And thinking back about it, that was one of the most effective ways he could have handled that. That was impacted me more than any number of spankings could have. We shouldn't criticize, humiliate, or put down a child, especially in front of others. You know, sometimes, and it can happen in here, you see your child running and you grab them and say, you know, if you can, and you can't always do it, and sometimes you have to discipline in that way. But if you can take them aside where no one else hears your reprimand, it's pretty effective. Praise in public, reprimand in private. You learn that in the Navy and the other services as well. The carrot can be much more effective than the stick. You know, most effective managers learn that when they are children, and if they're going to be successful at all, have learned it when they start to manage other people. I'd like to just take a few minutes to discuss punishment. You know, it doesn't take a lot of moxie, it doesn't take a lot of intelligence, to apply punishment. Anyone can beat a child. You don't have to have any sensitivity. You don't have to have any talent to do it. From the sixth grade through the eighth grade, I probably made more trips to the principal's office than I care to remember. And when the teacher sent you to the principal's office, you knew what was in store for you. The principal just grabbed the nearest yardstick, bent you over the table adjacent to his desk, and wailed away. And sometimes you'd see those pieces of yardstick breaking apart as he kept wailing away. He didn't have to exercise any judgment or have any understanding of the specific crime you had committed. The fact that the teacher had sent you there was enough, you know, that was sufficient for him. Nowadays, he would go to jail for that kind of treatment. But back then, the unofficial mantra was spare the rod and spoil the child. And that was exactly what they did. Turn to Proverbs 13, verse 24. I'm going to read three verses that probably were the basis for a lot of that behavior, that treatment at that time, all found in Proverbs. Proverbs 13, verse 24. He that spareth his rod hateth his son. Well, that's pretty strong language. If you hate your son, you don't spank him. But he that loveth him chasteneth him betimes. And that's just an archaic term for soon or often, repeatedly. Not just every now and then, but often. Proverbs 23, verse 13. Another verse in Proverbs. Proverbs 23, verse 13. Withhold not correction from the child, for if thou beatest him with the rod, he shall not die. It's not entirely true. People have been beaten with rods, and they have died. Proverbs 29, verse 15. Proverbs 29, verse 15. The rod and reproof give wisdom, but a child left to himself bringeth his mother to shame. So if you look at punishment as the principal method of discipline, it's a big mistake. Discipline shouldn't just be punishment. Discipline is training the child in the way he should go, and punishment is only a small part of that. You know, the better disciplined the child is, the less punishment is necessary or required. How well a child responds to discipline depends primarily on how much a child feels loved and accepted. So it's incumbent upon us to help create an environment that fosters and makes our children feel loved and respected. You know, the offset to the three scriptures that I just read in Proverbs are about beating, are the multiple scriptures that you find in the Bible that deal with love, with kindness, with sensitivity, with compassion, with forgiveness, with guidance, understanding, affection. If I tried to read them, it would take all afternoon. Turn to Psalm 23, verse 4. Psalm 23, verse 4. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. And I know you've all heard this explained before, where the shepherd uses the rod and the staff to guide the sheep, to keep them away from falling over a precipice, to keep them going in the right direction. He's not using it to beat them, just to guide them. In order for children to identify with parents and accept their standards, they must feel genuinely loved and accepted by them. You know, if you want your children to follow in your footsteps, if you want your children to believe the way you do, then you've got to set the standard for them, and you've got to, if you're going to give them a closer relationship to God, you know, which we feel we have, we need to make sure our children feel loved without any reservations at all. Why? You know, why is that important? Because this is the way that God loves us. It's a total love that has no reservations whatsoever. Unfortunately, you know, if we grew up with strict or severe parents, that is quite likely the way we view God, since that was the model we saw as children. And I've talked to people that have had that problem. Of course, that's the polar opposite of, you know, what God is really like. Let's look at briefly at the example of David and Absalom. 2 Samuel 18, verse 33. 2 Samuel 18, verse 33. And this is where David was pursuing Absalom. Absalom had tried to overthrow his kingdom and now is en route. But the king had instructed the men in his army, don't hurt him. Bring him back to me alive. And then, verse 33, 2 Samuel 18, he found out that he'd been killed. And the king was much moved and went up to the chamber over the gate and wept as he went. Thus he said, oh, my son Absalom, my son Absalom. Would God I had died for thee, O Absalom, my son, my son. He was just heartbroken. And you can imagine what it would be like to have loved so deeply that you would have given up your own life for your child. And I think probably a lot of parents have over the years done that very thing. We should think about this deep, all-encompassing love and examine our relationship with our children to see how it compares. You know, we can also use it as a way to measure all of our relationships to see where they can be improved. We can use these principles. If you currently have problems with family members, with friends, here is a great yardstick to review, which will be of immense help. I'm reading from the Living Bible Translation. When I heard Tim Hendrickson use this yesterday, I thought, oh no. But I'm only reading four verses. So 1 Corinthians 13, verse 4. 1 Corinthians 13, verse 4, the love chapter. Love is very patient and kind, never jealous or envious, never boastful or proud. Love is very patient, and patience is a key word that we need as parents. Never haughty or selfish or rude. Love does not demand its own way. It's not irritable or touchy. And when I look at that word irritable, I think of the example of the story that I read at first where the man was irritable. And I know without a doubt that every time his birthday rolls around for the rest of his life, he will think back to that time when his little boy was trying to kiss him. And it will move him deeply. It should. You know, it does not hold grudges and will hardly even notice when others do it wrong. It is never glad about injustice, but rejoices whenever truth wins out. If you love someone, you will be loyal to him no matter what the cost. You will always believe in him, always expect the best of him, and always stand your ground in defending him. When you use God's guidelines for loving your children with no reservations, and also apply these same principles to everyone else in your life, you'll be surprised at the amazing results.